It is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline Shop. Hundreds of Toyotas indoors and one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan.
All right, Woody, thank you so much as we bring in Mike Florio. Nice enough to join us here on a Thursday. Mike, good morning. How you doing?
Good, Joe. Good to be with you. Glad that we could fit it in this week since we couldn't do it tomorrow. So happy to do it.
I appreciate it. I got to tell you, by the way, the Pat McAfee stuff, I laughed my ass off yesterday. He throws out – how many bombs can he throw out before ESPN? I just like he's taunting ESPN because he's the only guy that does it. It must be in his contract. And you even started to chuckle a little bit with some of the stuff.
They put it on the graphic. I mean, on our show, which streams on Peacock and it's on SiriusXM 85, so we're not subject to the FCC restrictions – we'll drop an F-bomb from time to time. Every once in a while, I get Chris Sims sufficiently riled up that an F-bomb comes out. But we've never put it on the graphic. They put up a graphic, and there it was. It was amazing. So, it just shows you that they perceive the value that his reach has, that his brand has, that they're willing to let him do things that no one else has ever gotten away with on ESPN.
Yep, no question. Well, I guess you know what's been going on down here.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. The little soap opera with a quarterback and Brian Flores after going on a podcast with Lebatard and all of a sudden everybody's got a little different take, and I heard you and by the way, I thought Chris was really interesting because Chris's dad's one of the first guys I thought of with Bill Parcells, who wasn't always great with his dad Phil Sims, and everybody's take on it yesterday.
Well, look, the key is, and it changes from player to player, what does it take to get the most out of this guy? How do I coach this guy into the best version of himself? Where do I push his buttons? And a good coach has to figure out for each player, what will it take? And it's part of reading personalities, understanding interaction. And clearly, Tua is not the kind of guy who is going to thrive.
Correct.
When he's constantly beaten down verbally and mentally, and a lot of us are like that. I don't thrive in that setting. And especially with quarterbacks, you know, there's a connective tissue to what's going on with Daniel Jones in New York right now. They're not projecting confidence in him. If you watch the offseason Hard Knocks, they're trying to trade up and get somebody else. You start to believe the things that you're experiencing. To his point, when he first responded to the question about the differences between Flores and Mike McDaniel, I think that made a lot of sense. I think, you know, he maybe went a little far by calling him a horrible person. But the point is, if you hear all the time that you suck and you shouldn't be here, and we know what was going on 3 years ago. They were trying to trade for Deshaun Watson. Brian Flores was fixated on Deshaun Watson. It almost happened before the season started, and then it hovered over the team and Tua until the trade deadline. And lo and behold, after the trade deadline, Tua started playing better. What a shock. He wasn't in constant fear that he's going to get the phone call or the text message that he's no longer the starting quarterback. They have Deshaun Watson. So I understand that, and I was impressed by the way Flores handled it. I think it was very self-aware. It was very candid. It was very raw. It wasn't cliche. It wasn't coach speak. He's learned from that experience, and he didn't deny anything that Tua said about their interactions.
You know, I just say this because I saw Don Shula, who was as tough as they come, and how he treated Bob Greasy. I was there for Bob Greasy's last year, who by then was like a coach anyway. And the way he treated Dan Marino, he didn't treat – listen, if he ripped him, he didn't do it in front of the team. I don't know if he caught Dan Marino behind closed doors, but he treated his quarterbacks differently, understanding that, you know, they didn't get blasted in front of the team or the offensive meetings that Coach Shula stayed in. So I agree with that. Even old school back then was careful how you treat and don't want to lose the confidence of your quarterback to that point. All right.
Hey, Joe, let me say this. One of the great alternate universe questions of the last generation, what would Aaron Rodgers have done if he was the quarterback of the New England Patriots from 2005 through today? And Belichick would rip Tom Brady in front of the team. It got the other guys to realize there are no sacred cows, scared the hell out of Randy Moss in his first team meeting. 4 years later, Chad Johnson, same thing. But I don't think Belichick would have done that with Aaron Rodgers because Aaron Rodgers wouldn't have responded to that.
Right.
So Belichick would have given him more freedom. And, you know, like they treated Lawrence Taylor when Belichick was in New York, You want to find a way to make your great players do great things. And sometimes it means you got to ride them, and sometimes it means you got to leave them alone.
Yeah, no, totally agree. Totally agree. All right, so Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels starting, and now Bo Nix, who, by the way, I watched that first quarter, and he looked like he was about ready to be on the Pro Bowl team at the end of the year, the way he played without showing a lot of offense or defense. You surprised by that, or were you expecting it, Mike?
Well, I'm not surprised that Sean Payton was able to coach up the guy that he believed, based upon his scouting of all the quarterback prospects, he could coach up. He needs a guy who can run his offense the way he designs it. He didn't have that last year with Russell Wilson. So I think he was committed no matter what. I need a quarterback who can run my offense. Bo Nix fell to him. I think there were some parallels to Patrick Mahomes 7 years ago in that there wasn't like a consensus that Patrick Mahomes was the clear must-have quarterback. Mitch Trubisky went before Patrick Mahomes in 2017. But there was a small handful of guys who knew Mahomes was the real deal, and they kept their mouths shut. And I think the same thing applies here. Small handful of offensive minds who saw something in Bo Nix, 61 games at the college level, knows how to run the offense that he's given, smart, mature, talented, good arm, and Peyton loved him. And Peyton brought him in, and he earned that job. It wasn't given to him. He came in, and he proved he can run Peyton's offense, and he hasn't had that since Drew Brees. And this guy could become Drew Brees 2.0, because it's Peyton with a system that is constantly refined. He'll add plays on the morning of a game. He's always looking for ways to crack the defensive code. And I think he trusts that Bo Nix is a guy who he can tell him. Even if they install the play in a walkthrough at the ballroom at the hotel the morning of the game, Bo Nix will figure it out. He'll run it, and it'll work.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, he really looked good. So, well, 2 weeks of the kickoff, the new kickoff return. What are your thoughts on the numbers? There's obviously, 78% kickoff return. I know it's preseason, so everybody wants to try it. The ball's getting to the 28-yard line. Do you like what we've seen? I think it's going to get a lot better. I'm okay with it. What about you?
Well, Joe, here's what I believe is going to happen. If they don't move the touchback point from the 30 to the 35, you're going to see a lot of coaches who strategically and deliberately kick it out of the end zone. It's 28.3 so far through 2 weeks of the preseason. Just give them the 30. Give them the 30 and take the long return off the table. I'm not pinning my career on some fluke play just so the NFL can say we've revived a dead play and I'm going to lose a game that I would have won, and then at the end of the year, I miss the playoffs by one game and I get fired. No, thank you. Just put the ball on the 30. The average field position is a 28.3 anyway. Just put the ball on the 30 and let's go play defense. And if you do that, you don't have to waste any time in practice doing kickoff coverage. If you got a kicker who can consistently bang it out of the end zone, and pretty much every NFL kicker can at this point, just do that. So the owners are meeting next Tuesday on this private equity rule that they're going to put in place that allows owners to sell up to 10% of their team to these private equity funds and raise some, you know, money, some billions on top of the billions they already have. But on the agenda is a discussion and an update on the kickoff rule. And if the owners decide on their own, the league's not pushing this, but if they decide to make the change, they can. And I hope they do it before the season starts. The worst thing they could do is let the season play out 5 or 6 weeks and then change it, because I don't think they should ever play a season under two sets of rules. You've got, you know, half the year or close to it where the touchback point's the 30 and it's a different dynamic. Then all of a sudden, well, we're going to move it to the 35. We're resurrecting the kickoff in the middle of the season. I don't think that's good for anybody. If they're going to do it, and I think they should, they need to do it before week one.
See, Mike, the only thing is, this is a problem we had before, is they're at the Super Bowl and everyone, 15 of them are touchbacks, and so it was a waste anyway. So you just don't feel like we're going to get more teams that are trying to figure out something to get better field position and take some chances?
If you're the kickoff team, what do you do? What can you really do? I saw last week the 49ers-Saints game. Right before halftime, the 49ers kicker put the ball in the landing zone. It wasn't caught. It rolled into the end zone, and it wasn't returned, and that puts the ball on the 20. And I don't know that the Saints player was even aware. You know, a lot of these little glitches we're not going to know about until we see it play out. But if the ball hits between the goal line and the 20 and goes into the end zone or out of the end zone, the offense gets the ball at the 20, which is a huge advantage if you can pull it off. But are you confident you can do that? And if you're leading in a game in the second half and Tyreek Hill's back there waiting to try to catch the ball and rip off a touchdown return, and now you're back in a close game again. I had said at one point by the trade deadline, half the league will be deliberately kicking it out of the end zone. And I started talking to people about it, and I've gotten feedback along the lines of, forget trade deadline. There's going to be coaches who say, I'm not your guinea pig. I'm going to let others do this, and then I'll decide whether or not I want to dip a toe in that water. I'm not pinning my career on this brand new play we've never seen before. I want to see how it plays out before I make a final decision. And again, you don't have to practice it. So if you're not practicing it now, when are you going to start practicing it during the season? So that's why I think if they're going to change it, they need to do it now to give everybody a fair chance to adjust. You don't want them to adjust with, 6 days between games to all of a sudden the kickoff is a thing again, because if you kick it out of the end zone, it's going to the 35.
Mike, I know you guys got a lot on your plate, so you probably haven't been watching this real closely. This is a Dolphin thing. So Odell Beckham Jr., they signed him obviously to be the third wide receiver with Waddle and Tyreek Hill on the outside. So he still hasn't practiced. He's still standing around out there. And now people are saying he may not be ready for the start of the season. I don't know. The coach hasn't said that, but so a lot of people are going, Joe, stop pushing him as a third wide receiver. It's not going to happen. I still think he'd catch 35 or 40 footballs with those two guys on the outside. What's your thoughts on what Odell Beckham has left in the tank?
Well, he's always done his own thing, and he's always gotten ready to play his own way. And he's dealing with the reality that even though there's still a spot for him in the NFL, he's not the star that he once was. And I think that's difficult for anyone to process in that business when so much of your identity is tied up into what you became earlier in your career. And now you've got one guy making $30 million a year. You got another guy making $28 million a year. And he got a contract this year far less than last year. I think that's part of what he's processing too. I personally think that the Ravens overpaid him last year deliberately to try to help get things done with Lamar Jackson. It was kind of like an olive branch, and we're going to bring this guy in. You want him here. Because they paid him $15 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
Which people are like, wait a minute, who was anybody else even going to pay him 10? So the Dolphins were far below that. There's incentives in there. And, it puts the guy in a mindset where maybe he just decides, until I know I'm 100% ready to go, I'm not doing anything, because it's not like they're paying me what I'm used to making. So I think there's just a complicated stew of emotions that come into play. We'll see if he's ready week one. But, yeah, last year he clearly wasn't the guy that he'd been in the past. And maybe you don't need to be with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, but I wouldn't have high expectations for him this year. So if anything he does, you consider it a bonus.
Yeah. So I just kind of think that I heard Tyreek say this. We just need a guy to kind of help us move the chains and get first downs and win one-on-one and get a little separation and keep drives going for us to make some big plays on the outside. And I go, okay, all right, I can go with that. Hey, before I let you go, you made us aware of it. I just said no gambling, suspensions. Wow. Maybe everybody got the message, or are you still not? We're going to have some slip-ups here down the road.
I think guys have gotten smarter, right? I think they've learned from the mistakes that others have made. Don't bet in your own name. Don't bet on your own phone. Don't bet at work. Don't bet on football. The easy workaround is just have a family member do it. I'm serious. As long as you can trust that person not to extort you and say, I'm going to tell the commissioner what I've been doing, which probably isn't all that far-fetched. All it takes is one broken relationship, and that person who was making the bets for the friend, the cousin, the relative who's playing in the NFL, all of a sudden you got a problem. But I still think that it's happening. Look, guys are – how many years has it been now? 6 years. Guys are coming into the league who already had the ability to gamble. It's so accepted. It's so much part of what we do. I think that they just have – because the guys they've suspended, Joe, are the lowest of the low-hanging fruit,
right,
doing stupid things. The Calvin Ridley doing a five-team parlay on his phone. And what happens is the relationships they have with DraftKings, FanDuel, they rat on the guys. It's easy to catch. The harder stuff is what I'm concerned about. Inside information, selling it, sharing it, family members finding out things and placing bets or providing information to others based on that. The potential for rigging of games, the Jonte Porter thing where a guy pulls himself out of a game so the unders on his prospect hit. Those are the deeper issues that the NFL, I don't think, has the infrastructure to keep it from happening. All they can hope to do is catch a guy who does it.
Yeah. Good stuff, Mike. We have the Hard Rock app down here, and it's a big no-no for the team, obviously. And it's not that far away from stadium to that beautiful casino and hotel they have. Mike, thank you. Really appreciate you coming on. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Joe. See you, buddy.
Mike Flora from Pro Football Talk joining us this morning to talk a little bit. Hey, we got Kim Bocamper going to join us coming up. But first, I got to tell you about Chev, the CEO at Loctite. He's going, Joe, he calls me last night. I go, Chev, what is it? Hey, is everything okay? He goes, Joe, it's hurricane season. Make sure you tell people about our impact windows, doors, and our roofing. Make sure you let people know if it's about money. We got 100% financing, zero down, and impact windows and doors and roofing. No interest, no payments for a year. We're a nice size company. We're not small. We're in West Broward. We can take care of all of it. And you got a leaky roof. Why are you waiting? Why are you going to put more damage on your home? The one thing during hurricane season you can do your best to protect is during hurricane season, make sure you have Loctite taking care of impact windows and doors and even your roof for you. They do great work. They really do. Impact windows as low as $3 per month per window installed. And don't wait for the next storm. That was really his message. Oh, tell them Loctite services all of South Florida, Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County. They take care of all the permits and HOA approvals. They do everything. Once you agree to have Loctite do it, you're in great shape with a really good company. Licensed and insured contractor, 954-500-LOCK, 954-500-5625. With great people, going to answer the phone and answer all your questions with Loctite.